The following is an unrehearsed interview with United States Senator Chuck Grassley speaking to you from Washington, D.C. Participating in today's public affairs program is David Fannin of KKFD and KMCD Radio in Fairfield. Go ahead with your questions, David.
Good afternoon, Senator. I wanted to start out with the headline I saw on Breitbart about you blowing the lid off the whistleblower allegations in the U.S. Marshals Service and how it's mismanaged and the problems with personnel matters. For those of us who aren't that familiar with everything going on, could you explain what is going on there?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I gave a speech on this, so you can go to my website and get a full 5 or 6 minute speech I gave on it. A little more detail than I'll give you right now, but the point is that there has been a favoritism played by the director in regard to the hiring of some contract employees or contract corporations, and it could be both. And then also on the mismanagement of asset forfeiture funds that the Marshal Service might take, even violating people's constitutional rights of due process. And then not only that, but where they're legally taken, and in a lot of cases they aren't legally taken, but where they are legally taken, then we don't find very good use of the resources. In other words, you'd think they should be used for law enforcement, but I can tell you about a granite tabletop that was purchased for a Houston office that they can't even tell me the cost of it, and another instance in which they paid $22,000 for a conference table that isn't even in use. So what we're getting all this information from more than one whistleblower, and we're also getting some letters that indicate that the Department of Justice is finally waking up to some of this mismanagement of money. But my whole purpose of investigation is to bring embarrassment to the organization and get things straightened out so that the money's going to be handled right and people's constitutional rights are going to be not violated. And by the way, this is going to, not only for the Marshal Service, but for all law enforcement, if we're going to bring justice to people to make sure their constitutional rights are not violated, we're going to actually have to pass some legislation reforming asset forfeiture.
Thank you. My next question has to do with an issue that has reared its ugly head in Iowa and all over the Midwest, actually, the bird flu. Now, I understand that you signed a letter to the USDA urging the Animal and Plant Inspection Service to make the bird flu a high priority. And how might they do that?
Well, I think, quite frankly, they are, but I want them to know that I'm concerned about it. Senator Klobuchar signed the same bill, and then we also signed a bill to the appropriators to make sure that there's enough funds available both for cleanup and prevention as well as restocking the houses. And I would say that FDA is doing the best they can, as well as the state of Iowa and Secretary Northey, our own Secretary of State. But remember, it's not just now an Iowa problem. It's a problem in several states, and actually starting out in Canada a few weeks ago. But Iowa, one out of every five eggs comes out of Iowa. So, you know, we're a major producer, number one in the nation. And so when it hits Iowa so strongly, and at this point about 20 million birds have to be eradicated, and then eradication, what do you do with them? That's still some problems that aren't answered. I had an opportunity to meet with some egg producers this week in my office as well. They didn't have any additional ask for me or Senator Klobuchar to do right now, but we're standing ready to work with them if they need some intervention with any government agency that's affected by this.
Now,
but,
you mentioned something about restocking. Are you talking about, you know, paying to replace the dead birds?
Yeah. There's already legislation on the books over a long period of time that would pay about $2.50 per bird for restocking. But there's another issue before you restock, and that is that the farmers can't restock until they get permission from the U.S. Department of Agriculture to restock, because if they would restock on their own and then they had a subsequent avian flu, there would be no indemnity at that point. And so we may also have to deal with the Department of Agriculture on the issue of repopulation. And quite frankly, to get built back up to the consistent numbers that they have if they had no disease, it may take a year and a half to, if they started right now, a year and a half to get fully restocked. So in the meantime, when every cage does not have a chicken in it, you know, that's costing, well, one of the egg producers said it's cost them $300,000 to $400,000 a week of income, just as an example. And it also is a problem for workers for these firms. One company in Minnesota that wasn't in my office, but the report that was given to me by Iowa egg producers is they were going to lay off a couple hundred people. So sure, it's going to have a big economic impact.
Sure. Thank you. My next question has to do with trade. I know you're a member of the Senate Committee on Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry, and I was kind of curious to get your take on the reopening of trade relations with Cuba. And, you know, are you in support of the president's efforts? And what do you see as the biggest opportunities for Iowa farmers as those doors open again?
Yeah, well, I probably have a different opinion than Iowa agriculture has on this, because they see an opening there that, quite frankly, isn't a new opening. It's just a little bit different how you might finance it. Presently, if there's sales to Cuba, they have to be cash sales, as opposed to the normal international trade things where probably you pay something in 30 or 60 days. But I'm not dealing just with agriculture when I answer your question. I'm dealing with the overall situation that if we're going to give these privileges to Cuba, they ought to be earned. And earning would be the release of political prisoners, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of assembly, all the basic freedoms we have that the Cuban people used to have before Castro 50 years ago, and he's taken away from them and has brought them from a relatively rich nation into one of the most impoverished nations in the world. Now, obviously, if the president goes ahead, and he can go ahead on a lot of things, the only thing is he can't do away with the embargo without congressional approval. But whatever he goes ahead on is going to help that country financially. But when right now, if you don't have all these freedoms, you aren't helping the common ordinary person. You're helping the Castro regime and the military and the political elite. And I think we ought to be doing things that help the average Cuban to get out of poverty.
You have time for one more question, David.
Thank you. My final question is, in regard to the Fuel Choice and Deregulation Act of 2015 that you've co-sponsored the Senate bill with Senator Paul, he recently said that the EPA's regulation of fuels is artificially limiting options for consumers and producers and preventing the adoption of new fuel options that could benefit our environment, our economy, and our energy security. Yeah. And he introduced that bill that you've co-sponsored. Can I get your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's very important to override EPA not approving E15 for the summer months. And whenever EPA steps in to retard the expansion of ethanol, it's going to reduce the amount of money that's put into infrastructure. And what we're trying to do is promote E15s, because the Department of Energy have studied cars made since 2002, and every one of them could use E15 if the owner wants to do it. And that's where we should be headed, as far as I'm concerned.
What are your thoughts on the Dakota Access Pipeline?
I'm in favor of the Keystone XL Pipeline, and Congress has to vote on that because of crossing national boundaries with Canada. But we don't have any involvement whatsoever in the
Understood.
Pipeline
I understand. I just thought you might have an opinion, since the 343 miles goes from one end of the state or one corner of the state to the other.
Well, I guess I have this opinion. If we'd had this attitude that you shouldn't have a pipeline go across to Iowa 60 years ago, nobody would have natural gas in their house. And I think people really much appreciate the delivery of natural gas. It's coming by pipeline, so I don't know how anybody could be against pipelines.
I appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, David, for participating in today's public affairs program. This has been Senator Chuck Grassley reporting to the people of Iowa.